Okay, I'd like to welcome and thank Rabbi Rubin for graciously coming, as he has many times in the past, to learn with us this evening. The topic is Amalek, and I'm very tired, or something like that. Okay.
Thank you for the honor, and thank you for coming out tonight. I always feel privileged to have this opportunity. So a couple of just maybe some disjointed introductory comments about Parshat Zohar until we get to what I think is at least the focus of what I'd like to relay before the shir ends at 9:15. Gemara says, whoever mentions something in someone else's name, like we know from Harvona and Big Time Bateresh and Esther, everybody had a role in mentioning the people who had some information to relay over to Hashverosh. So I want to just start with a very brief Dvar Torah. I saw somewhere on the internet. It doesn't make me the owner of the Dvar Torah. You have the same internet as I do, but it was exciting about Purim, that why we all dress up in masks. What is the relationship between masks and hiding ourselves and our true identities on Purim? Because the as the story evolved, the Jewish people in Shushan and the rest of all the provinces never really were comfortable revealing their true identities. In fact, there was a little bit of tension between Mordechai and Esther around this issue of that she should go and tell the king exactly who she was and who she stood for, and called Ambalashon. And it was Esther who was a little bit in retreat in the early stages. So the concept of the Jewish people eating at the king's suda with his kelim and kelim shonim, and the idea that the sublimation of Jewish identity that was part of the character of the Jews in Persia at the time actually was the reason that Am Yisrael suffered probably more from the hands of Amalek. And it's interesting, Maral points out, Yeshno Amachad Mufuzar Mufurad Ben Amim. Maral points out something interesting, that if you're an Amachad, you can't be Mufuzar Mufurad. If you're one nation, then you're not spread out among all the people. It's an inner contradiction in a description. So in one hand, you could say it's the same argument that was Paro had made about the Jewish people, that they're one nation and they're going to create a fifth column and destroy us from within because they're all over. How many times have we heard the same anti-Semitic mantras about the Jews are going to take over the world, and we own the world, we own Hollywood, we own the press, we own the banks. I wouldn't mind if we own the press a little bit more. Hollywood also wouldn't be so bad if we own that. Maybe we're doing well in the banking area, so it's one out of three. And the concept of Am Mufuzar Mufurad is really the strength of Am Yisrael, because although we're Am Mufuzar Mufurad, the strength of Am Yisrael lies in the fact that we're all Am Echad. And Maral points that out. So that's the antidote to this concept of the Jewish people losing their identity. And the masks on Purim are to remind ourselves is that the miracle happens in Purim because of unmasking ourselves. So it's for Hafochu, is that the mask is the opposite of what Am Mufuzar Mufurad is. So a little combination of ideas. I want to discuss a little bit of Parshat Zohar and Amalek. And there's around three parts to this. The only unifying theme to these three parts is that they all talk about Amalek. So bear with me, and I hope that they'll make some sense as we begin to explain it. If you open your Chumash, please, to the end of Parshat Bishalach and the end of Parshat Ki Tetzeh. That is where the two Parshiot of Amalek appear. Page 390 in the Art Scroll and 1066. 390 and 1066. That's another thing. 390 and 1066. The Rabbi Meidan points out, I'm going to skip the 10-page article and just get to the crux of it, that these two stories are quite different if you look, not even so carefully. If you look, let's say, in the Parshat Bishalach, at the end of the Parsha, after Az Yashi, after Kriyat Yamsuf, and after and before Matan Torah, Vayavo Amalek V'yelachem Yisob Rufidim, Rashi points out Rufidim Sherafu Yadayim Yatorah, that they lost their strength, and we'll come back, this is a very important point, they lost their connection or their commitment to Torah. It's hard to understand exactly now why in Parshat Bishalach, what kind of Torah we're talking about. But if you had time to look at the Parshat Bishalach, you'll see that the Parshiot before Bishalach have a lot, before Amalek in Bishalach, have a lot to do with Bnei Yisrael questioning God. So there is no question, we'll come back to that, that the subtext of Amalek in Parshat Bishalach are about the Jewish community losing some of their foundational belief in the Borei Olam. Vayavo Amalek v'ilachem im Yisrael b'rufidim. Vayomer Moshe Yoshua b'chalan on Hashem v'tzei hilachem ba'amalek machar. I won't have time to go into this. I just want to point it out to you. This is, we're not doing Parshat B'Shalach. But why would he appoint a general to go to battle tomorrow when the battle of Amalek seems to be raging at the time? Because Amalek came by Yavo Amalek. Anochi nitzav roshi giba matel him biadi, and my hands will be raised by God. The stick will be in my hand. And by the way, again, we're not going to do B'Shalach. You never hear the mention of the staff again. He says, "Go fight Amalek." I hand and Hashem's stick is matel kim biadi, and then that, as opposed to the Chekhov concept of if there's a gun that appears in the first act, it has to show up again in the third act in any good show. This mate elokim does not show up in the third act. So if somebody wants to do a little bit of research, what happened to this mate elokim, I'd be very happy to find out because I don't have the answer for it. I'm sure somebody does who's listening to this recording. Vayas Yoshua kasher Ibrahim Moshe lilachem b'malek u'moshe Aaron b'chur alur u'shegiva vayu kasherim Yoshua yado. We can read it in English, so I don't have to take the time in translating it. Vayak kasher yor Moshe yado v'gavah Yisrael v'kasherinech yado v'gavah Amalek. We don't really hear anything about Yehoshua's strategy in this war. The victory of the war is all dependent on what? Moshe's arms. They're going up and down on Hur and Aaron. And then, of course, we have the mitzvah of Zechorat Amalek. So that's what I want to connect to, that if you just looked at Amalek in Parshat B'Shalach, the story of Amalek in Parshat B'Shalach has much more to do with what seems to be, at least, the fear or the reverence or the belief in God than it does in the actual battle of Yehoshua and Amalek. At least that's the way it's described in B'Shalach. I'm not taking away at all from the battle and from the strategies that Yehoshua must have put in place. And we know that this certainly was a battle because they were never defeated. If you go now to Parshat Ki Tetzeh, put your little blue ribbon in B'Shalach, if you have an art scroll. Ki Tetzeh is the Parshat Zohar, which we lame. Here also, Chazal don't have the same type of clear imagery as we do in the end of Parshat B'Shalach, linking, juxtaposing the faith of the Jewish people to the attack of Amalek. It's not as clear, but it's interesting that Chazal do make that connection. There is a connection between Amalek's attack on one hand and the Jewish people's attitude on the other hand. Where does that come from? Anybody want to just, if you remember from your closer learning days, if not, I'll point it out to you. It's the juxtaposition between an attitude and the advent or the attack of Amalek. So if you look in the Psukim right before Amalek, we have the story of that you can't have unequal weights and measures, Evan ve'evan v'kisra, and then Rashi points out that a people who act dishonestly in business ultimately will be the cause for bringing on Amalek. So there seems to be some metaphysical reason that Amalek attacks, and that it has to do with the way that we deal with one another. If you take a look at Rashi, Zechorta Asher Shalcha Amalek Im Shekarta B'Midot B'Mishkalot Havei Doeg Mi Geirui Ha'oyev. That if we deal dishonestly with one another, then we can certainly expect our enemies to attack. So the Parsha B'Shalach is Bein Adam L'Makom, and the Parsha of Ki Tetzeh is Bein Adam L'Chaver. But both of these Parshiot are linked to some degree to the attitude of the Jewish people, and therefore the attack comes. I will add, parenthetically, for those of you who appreciate nuanced language, why it's not Vayetze Amalek. When you go to war, you don't come to battle, you go to battle. And for instance, Vayetze Sichon, almost every battle, I'm not an expert on battle words in Tanakh, but at least those that come that I could think about and associate during this conversation, the enemy goes out of his place to attack the Jewish people. It is Vayavo Amalek. Amalek came to us. I don't remember who pointed it out, but it certainly fits into at least the theme that I started considering, that Amalek isn't attacking, we're bringing it on. Vayavo Amalek. Our behavior, our attitude, is what ultimately brought on the attack of Amalek. It doesn't mean they didn't leave, but Vayavo, we brought it on ourselves. If they came to us, they brought the battle to us. Sometimes I tell kids when they lose a game that they didn't beat us, we lost the game. There's a difference between the two for those who follow losing sports. So if you continue going, Zechor Shalacha Amalek Baderech HaMavitzitcha Mimitzrayim Asher Korcha Baderech V'yizanev B'cha Kol Nechashalim Acharecha V'ata Ayef V'yageya V'lo Yerei Elokim. So again, you see in both of these parshiot, both of Bishalach and Ki Tetzeh, you see a theme developing that there is some sort of an attitudinal connection between our relationship with God, our fellow man or fellow person, and the attack of Amalek. If you don't pay attention to it, you can skip over it. And by the way, if you go back to Bishalach, if you can just skip back, did you leave your blue ribbon in Bishalach so you can go back and forth? Is that blue? Oh, you left a piece of paper. No, I explicitly said the blue ribbon. That's not good enough. That paper won't work. I'm colorblind, so I thought you were looking at me because it's not blue. And my wife says to me, don't talk about colors if you can't see colors. But I always forget that no one sees the world the way that I see the world. There's a little bit of self-centricism in this, that if my world is not, there's no purple and there's no green, then no one has purple and green. But it's not true. Most people have purple and green in their life. If you look at the end of the War of Amalekim, Pasuk Yud Gimel, in end of Bishalach, however you, whatever place you put in there, it's fine with me. Vayachalosh Yoshua et Amalek v'et Amo l'ficharav. Never vanquished, never really beat Amalek, really weakened Amalek. So if you take the metaphor of Amalek's story, and you don't take it the actual literal interpretation, that besides the war, there was some other subtext that was going on here within this battle, then there always seem, and I know I'm going out far on this, and just to take a homiletical license, which I think is okay, because I'm not trying to take away from the pshat, is that the reason why if you connect the attitude of the Jewish people to Vayavo Amalek, then it makes sense why it's Vayachalosh, because we're always struggling in some form or another to aspire to another level of spiritual perfection, and it oscillates. There are vicissitudes in our belief and in our actions and our attitudes, and but life is dynamic. So as much as we struggle among ourselves or in ourselves, that reflects the battle that we had with Amalek, because we'll never really reach perfection in our own belief system, or our own attitude, or our own behavior, in order to say that we can actually vanquish and beat and destroy and crush the enemy of Amalek. That's if you take it on the metaphysical plane. If you take it to something on the pshat plane, obviously there's much more to read into it from a militarily point of view, but I thought that it would be interesting to frame that, because I want to show you a couple of comments that touch upon this and very other important aspects of Amalek. But before we go there, I wanted to introduce something, and I didn't get to it when we first started. If you take a look at your second page, we're going to skip the first page because I wanted to make sure I have time to get to the core of this class and not the secondary aspect. If we don't get to this, I'm sorry to say, I don't think, maybe I'll have time. If you take a look at Perek Lamed in Shmuel Aleph, it's on the second page. You see some pattern behavior of Amalek. Vayibavo David v'anashav tziklag b'yom ha'shlishi v'yamalaki pashtu el negev v'el tziklag v'yaku et tziklag v'yisrufu oto ba'esh. Amalek attacked Tziklag as David and his warriors were not there. They came from the back. Now, that coming from the back typifies Amalek's character of war. They don't attack front lines. They attack the weakest point. Now, you would say that's a good strategy. If you look at our psukim, either one, and he attacked the weak. So the story, and also Asher Karcha Baderach, the three stories that, if you look at them, the one in Bishalach, the one in Kitese, and the one in Shmuel, all have that same symptom of a Amalek brand of cruelty, of attacking the enemy, or attacking, in this case, the Jewish people, in our weakest spot. I always tell kids, I mean, it's to some degree there's some truth in the adult world, that you should never sit in the back row of shul, because Amalek always looks for the weakest spot to attack him. And the back row is the, really, usually, not in Renat, but the back row is usually the talking section of most shuls, and that's why Amalek comes in from the back, and it's right here in the Chumash. So of course I always have one student always say, yeah, but I can take on Amalek. I can do that. I said, okay, then you're in charge of the back, no Amalek here plan. Let's see how you do. And never use. And frankly, Gemara says that you're supposed to not daven. You're supposed to come in, I think, dalet. Anybody remember what Gemara says? Dalet, three ptachim, I think. The distance of three entrances into a shul. Whereas the back seat is usually the most attractive row. Certainly, this is the Amalek row. These three stories all have a commonality. You should know that Rav Meidan splits them up in a shir that he had written up that I had opportunity to read. I'm not going to go through all the shir. It's a very nice shir that he put together. He says that the one in Bishalach and the one in Kitetze are not connected. They aren't the same battle. And that it goes through the textual analysis as he only among his cohort of scholars can do, and to demonstrate that the battle in Kitetze was independent and separate from the battle in Bishalach. But for my purposes, at least here, whether it's the same battle or it isn't, then it certainly is the same theme. The reason why that's important to point out that they are different battles is that if you look in Kitetze, none of the imagery is there. Moshe's not there. His arms aren't up in the air. He doesn't have Mateh Elokim B'yadi. There's no Aaron. There's no Hur. So you could say, there's a way to answer it. Remember I mentioned Machar? You could say that, let's say, if Amalek talked on Monday, this was the Monday narrative in Bishalach, and this is the Tuesday narrative in Kitetze. And the Torah, and it's not unusual for the Torah to take references from the Meraglim. Rav Meidan's shot is very interesting, but it's not compelling. Because if you look at the Meraglim, for instance, we use the Meraglim in Devarim to complement what we know in Parshat Shlach. And the Ramban says that where the Torah maybe is a little bit curt or a little bit short on one end, elaborates as expansive on the other end. And a Torah scholar has to look at the Torah holistically and not look at it in separate pieces. But the theme, at least, that I think jumps from the page in the Parshiot of Amalek, whether they're two or they're three, not so much in Shmuel, but certainly the theme that it's at is that this Amalek is not just an enemy, it's also a concept. And it's not just a concept, it's also it's linked to the behavioral patterns of the Jewish people. I do want to point out, and I finally came across it, for those who have Rav Soloveitchik's Chumash, the one that was recently printed by Misora, the English Chumash Rav Soloveitchik has, take a look at, I think it's in the one in Bishalach, there Rav Soloveitchik has a point that many of you probably may have heard, that Amalek is a concept, it's not a genealogy, it's not a genetic disposition, it is not something which you can literally hand down on a bloodline. Amalek, and remember, Rav Soloveitchik is post-Holocaust, post-World War II, would liken any enemy of the Jewish people that seems to have this terrible antipathy and this animosity towards the Jewish people that's almost groundless and that senseless hatred is a form or manifestation or an ideological offshoot of Amalek. It's not taking away from Amalek as a gene connection. He expands it that Amalek is also a concept. And this is a very important talk in understanding it, because what is the relationship we have Amalek? Is Amalek still around in our generation? I don't want to touch politics at all, please, and I won't go there, but I used to believe, and I won't extend it to where I am trying to make sense of my concept, is that using the Rav Soloveitchik thought, that any nation of the world that hates us just for the sake of hating the Jew, and that makes it their life's goal, their ambition, their aspiration to wipe out and to punish, to torture, to use all sorts of nefarious and insidious ways to harm the Jewish people, is an offshoot of Amalek. I used to think that same metaphor was about the lines of enemies that hate us today. But it's hard to understand because if you... Okay, without moving on further than that. I want you to take a look at your notes, and I want to look a little bit closer at this concept of what is Amalek? What was Amalek's problem? What provoked him? What was the underlying motivation to attack the Jewish people? And it's not, I don't have anything really great to add to it. I did bring in some writings of the Maral and some Rav Kook. And I think I want to come back to this concept of Soloveitchik, and if we have time, I'll come back to the first page, which I skipped. And I think there's a lot of relevance in understanding it. Sometimes, I'm sure you do, a question, what is the source of anti-Semitism? Why is it that when we're powerless as a nation, we're hated? And when we're powerful as a nation, we're also hated. And in every generation, or every few generations, there's always that one antidote, that one remedy that's going to say, now we've solved the problem of anti-Semitism. Whether it was enlightened Europe in the early 1900s, or the late 1800s and the beginning of the 1900s, or it was the early Zionist era of the 1940s, we were always going to find the new formula that would create the Jew to be accepted universally among all people of the world. And without offering any socio-political explanations beyond what these sources will say, it's still a question worth pondering, because I don't even think these questions, these answers, really do explain it to its depth, because it's such a complex issue. So one answer is Rav Soloveitchik. He just says who Amalek is. But Rav Soloveitchik doesn't explain why is Amalek Amalek. Where does it come from? Now, just on the surface level, there is a familial reason of Amalek. What would be the familial? What would be the genetic reason for Amalek? Where does he come from? Who's Amalek's?
His
Esav, right. So it's a very, it's a calculated, clear, very tangible, understandable hatred. Esav was lost his brachot, and his grandson came to avenge his father's loss. But if you only take it as an Esav source, then the psukim of wiping out Amalek, Tap and Ashim, and the story of Sheol, who saved Agag, but wiped out everyone else around him, and then Sheol lost his melucha because he didn't go to the extra level of wiping out Amalek. It's hard to understand that Amalek is only because of Esav's grandson. There is a disproportionate amount of response that we need to put into play for Amalek's attack on the Jewish people. So I brought in two and a half, three sources that will discuss this. And now it's going to come back to the beginning of this year, Vayi Adav Emunad Bahashemesh and Hur in his hands. I think it all comes together at a certain point. So although it sounds like there's disparate pieces of disconnected concepts, just try to hold them on together, and hopefully we'll be able to make some sense out of them as we get to the end. If you take a look at the story of Undet Siklag, it's Maral Miprag Vurot Hashem. Maral discusses Amalek in a few places. I think I brought two different sources. V'hine ha-parshiyot ba'ot mikusharot t'chila kriyat yamsoch v'achar kach milchemet Amalek. B'shalach, if you don't take the Rav Meidan piece, that all of this is the same story with different, multiple perspectives of the same story, it's very important to connect Amalek at the end of Bishalach to the story of Kriyat Yamsuf in the middle of Bishalach. Why? Anyone want to take a shot at that before we see further than Maral? Okay, I think studying Bishalach and Amalek has many different themes and different avenues to take. Because when Am Yisrael is being attacked by Mitzrayim, the Jewish people screamed at Moshe, and Moshe says, Hashem yilachem lachem batem tacharishun, and then God says, Ma titzak alai, debel b'Yisrael v'Yisau. In the infant, nascent stages of the Jewish people, they panicked when the enemy attacked. By the end of Bishalach, when Amalek attacks, says, Vabtzei lehi lachem Amalek. You see the growth, the development, the evolvement of the Jewish people from the beginning of Bishalach until the end of Bishalach is actually quite spectacular. They were not a fighting people in Bishalach in the beginning of the Parsha to emerge as a fighting force at the end of the Parsha. Maybe that's the reason why Vayachlosh. Maybe they really weren't that good and they were only able to weaken Amalek and they needed a little more practice on the playing field. But if you get back to this Bishalach, he links it. The Maral has a very interesting link. And that's why the Maral will not, at this point, connect Esav to Amalek as the predominant factor for Amalek's hatred. Because he says it's not by accident that the story of Amalek is embedded in Parshat Bishalach, which comes right after Kriyat Yamsuf. Vayiminu bad Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. God appears in his full glory before Parshat Yitro with miracles destroying the enemies of the world, or at least destroying the greatest empire. Amalek sees the great strength of God and the belief of the Jewish people in Hashem. That's when Amalek attacks. So that is why I was emphasizing in the beginning of the conversation that Vayihi Yadav Emunad Bahashemesh and Aaron and Hur went up in the mountain, and the battles doesn't seem to at all reference the strategies, but it only references faith, because Amalek is, as I said earlier, linked to the Jewish people's faith in God, and Amalek was instigated not by what the Jewish people necessarily did provoke them, but by the fact that there was a God within the world, which they were not able to come to terms with. They couldn't reconcile this new faith of the Jewish people with the Borei Olam. Take a look at the Maral. V'yachakav b'Amalek, ki achar shekara lehem hayam, v'kani Yisrael etzem ma'alatan hagdola, az ba ha'oyev. Ki zeh ha'oyev eino mitnaged li Yisrael. Now, I know those of you who are looking for socio-political reasons why Amalek hates the Jewish people, this is not going to be your favorite vote. Your vote. Ki zeh ha'oyev eino mitnaged li Yisrael rak mitzad kidushat Yisrael b'mashvim nivdalim mikol ha'umot. The Amalek despises the Jew because we are separate from Umot Olam, v'zehu etzem ma'alatam, and that is the strength of the Jewish people. L'fichach Amalek hayro devacha Yisrael. Remember the term what Haman used? Yeshno am echad mefuzar umufurad bein amim v'dateim shonot. The Jews are different. The Jews are separating themselves out. The Jews are creating enclaves. They're creating communities. They're creating Goshen. Now, if you look actually at the beginning of Parshat Shmot, I'm still waiting for someone to... I noticed something years ago. I was hoping somebody else would point it out just to validate my assumption. The decrees of Paro only begin after the Torah tells us, Vayishutzu, Vayirbu, Vayatzmu, Ma'od, and the Jewish people started spreading out of Goshen. As long as we were in Goshen, it almost seems as if Paro let us live in peace. As soon as the Jews started spreading out and they left Goshen, then the fear of this Yeshno Am Echad Mefuzar Mufurad Bein Amim became an obsession for Paro. The same obsession certainly deals with the Amalek, that there was some degree, the more separate we are as a people, he feels, the more Kedusha we garner, the more animosity and hatred it generates. So then you would say, well, if that's the case, maybe the enlightened period of the early 1800s, 1900s had some merit to it, that if the Jews would stop separating themselves and start integrating and start assimilating, then we would have fewer problems of anti-Semitism. But history hasn't borne that out at all. It has not been our experience in history whatsoever, not 1935 and not in 2017. The only thing that that brings to is assimilation, but it certainly doesn't bring to more tolerance, acceptance, and love, and an embrace. Tolerance is not even a good word. I don't want to be tolerated. I want to be tolerant. Just I'm going to tolerate that person. I don't want to be tolerant. I want to be accepted as an equal among equals universally. And that doesn't. So I don't know what the antidote is to anti-Semitism, but certainly the Maral points to a certain degree of a connection between our faith, our way of life, and Amalek's response. If he's skip to the bottom. Let's go to the next page. If you go to the next page, Maran Or Chadash. The Maran Or Chadash is a commentary on Megillah and Purim. As opposed to the Maral Gvurot Hashem, which is more of a commentary on Yitziat Mitzrayim. So the Maral in Or Chadash says the following. Top of the page. L'kach koach Amalek rotze l'dchot et Yisrael l'batel tam l'gamrei v'lehefach zeh moresh shem Amalek ki kfar manu ki Yisrael nikru yishurun v'ilu Amalek hu hefach zeh shu me'ukal ki hu nachash akhlaton. Amalek, he says, comes from the word, the root word, corrupt. And now, this is another attempt of an explanation, which also doesn't really bear itself out in history, but I find it to be interesting. The root of the Jewish people, the core of the Jewish people, should be Yashar, should be Yisrael, Yishurun. The root of Amalek is Mu'ukal, is corrupt and is crooked. It says these two concepts can't be reconciled together. The crooked...
It's a funny thing to say, because Yaakov,
Achia, Yaakov,
he said,
right,
exactly. Yaakov le Mishor.
Right.
So Yaakov himself is, I don't want to use crooked.
No, that's okay, that's fine.
Anyway, the terminology, to use that as Yishur, to use Jesse's side as Yishur, and ignore our
history. So, you know, I think it's a very fair question. The only, maybe just response without giving an answer to it, it would be that Yaakov evolved. Yaakov started out Kiakvein Pamayim, and he ended up Kisarit al Mukim Anashim Batuchal. Now, Yaakov responds back to me, could be, but yet, when Yaakov got his name Yisrael, never lost his name Yaakov. And if you look into some of the parshiot from, Vayishlach on, you'll see Yaakov and Yisrael toggling back and forth under different contexts. And there was some like Rav Shimon Shaul Hirsch want to explain when were Yisrael and when were Yaakov. But that's a strong point. Our roots certainly had, you know, that kind of dishonesty in it. Of course, if you take the more modern approach of different communities that try to explain away all of the misbehaviors of the Avot and say everything that they were, Yaakov was fine and justified for the entire process of dishonesty. That's a good point. It's a very good point, and the problem we have with this, and I'm going to come back to it in another point that Rav Kook makes, is that we have a high standard for ourselves as the Jewish people, and if we're Yeshurun and they're Mu'ukal, well, what happens when the Jewish people are not living up to our mandate, and our people are demonstrating a certain degree of dishonesty and corruption and deviousness and dubious character in ways that certainly don't bring honor to us and our legacy, does that take away from the core value of the Jewish people? So I'll give you the answer to that. So Rav Kook addresses that in one of his more famous letters. His letter is 555, if you want to go search it out. And I'm sure I know it's translated already, because there are many people who took some of Rav Kook's best letters and they made the greatest hits out of them, and they put them all together and compiled them. He has four volumes of letters called Igrot Riyah. So whoever did that had to do a lot of reading, or at least just did the first two books and, you know, made believe he did the rest of the four. If you look in the book Igrot Riyah, letter 555, I think it's in the second volume, Rav Kook explains that Am Yisrael has two components to it. You're going to see it here tonight. There's something called the Bechira and a Sula. I don't know if you've ever heard this. It's very Kookonian in his concept. We are born with a skula nafshit, and that's afa pi shachat yisrael yisrael hem kol yisrael yesham chelak b'olam haba. That is immutable. It's irrevocable. It's irreversible. It's something that we have as part of our genetic spiritual makeup. We have a skula ki am skula and ki mamlechet konim v'goy kadosh. That's who we are. Then Rav Kook says we have a b'chira. The job of b'chira is the choices we make in life. The choices we make in life manifest and bring to light and actualize our skula. So a person who has no connection to the life of Torah and mitzvot, Kook would say, a person's skula, which is a little chabadniki also, but remember, of Kook's mother was Lubavitch, so it's not a big shock that, there's a lot of crossover between Rav Kook and certainly Hasidut in general, but certainly in particular Chabad, so that you can never take away the skula nafshit of Am Yisrael. I'm going to say that, just going to leave that in Hebrew, Jim, because it's being taped here. So that skula nafshit will never be taken away. When a person is so far away from Torah mitzvot, there is less of a manifestation, there's less of an actualization, less of an expression, but it doesn't diminish from the core value of that person. And that's why, for instance, there's always, you know, every time you see Lubavitch out in the street, I mean, I'm not an expert in Lubavitch philosophy and theology, but certainly the idea of having every Jew perform a mitzvah at any time, whether there's any continuation or there's any long-term plan, it makes no difference, because at that moment, the person is expressing the skula of that person's birth. So getting back to, we'll get to Rav Kook. If you look at Rav Kook, he says that there's right under this maral on the left side, there are two Rav Kook comments, one on the right side, one on the left side. And he says the following. About the Kedushatam, Shirafu Yadayim in HaTorah, because if you go back to the first one, Bishalach, it says there, Shayub Rafidim, as I explained to you in the Rashi, Shirafu Yadayim HaTorah, their hands got weakened from Torah. Shiripu Yadayim Lo Yuchal Lefol, Shidei Esav Sholetet, Israel. Our physical weakness of performance of mitzvot can only happen on a physical level. We can never, Esav will never conquer us on a spiritual level. Aval b'kedushatam haklalit, the holiness, shemitzad kritut habrit, Shegamzeb b'kesha melech la'abed, Amalek wanted to destroy not just the physical and annihilate the Jewish people physically, but he wanted to vanquish us and annihilate us spiritually. L'davar zeh ein shum inyan b'chiri nogea. That could never happen. You can read the rest of this from Rav Kook on your own. You look at some of our enemies, and I think it's fair to say this historically, we've had two types of enemies in our long history of suffering and of persecution and expulsions and struggles. One enemy tried to destroy us physically, Haman. Haman had no interest in destroying us on any spiritual level. It was just physically annihilate the Jewish people. And we've had other enemies who wanted to spiritually eradicate the spiritual side, the tone, the flame, the flicker of the Jewish people. Let's say Hanukkah is a good example. Hanukkah and Purim are bookends. One is a spiritual war, one is a physical war. And if you look at most recently in our lifetime, I'm looking around the room, I think it's fair to say this, in our lifetime, we are certainly the generation, or the two or three generations post the Holocaust, which was not a spiritual war against the Jewish people whatsoever. It did not make a difference what kind of a Jewish person the person was. It was an enemy of the Nazis, Yimach Shemam v'Zichrom. And the spiritual war, I know I'm going out a little bit of a stretch, but I'm saying it just to provoke thinking, not to say that this is unconditionally correct. I'm not speaking as a historian, or as an academic, or as a scholar, just as an observer of history. I think the whole Soviet Union thing, post-Stalin, in the communist era, about eradicating the Jewish theme, the Jewish thought, the Jewish identity, was much more of a spiritual war against the Jewish people than it was a physical war against Jewish people. Those Jews who assimilated, they lived like in misery and squalor and in poverty like every other person in the Soviet Union. It didn't make a difference. There was no real target. Well, we knew in our early years about the prisoners of Zion and the solidarity, the student struggle for solidarity and all of the movements. That was for the Jews who declared themselves interested and eager to move to Israel. They were the prisoners of Zion, but not the regular Jews. And I think Rav Kook, remember, Rav Kook lived in, he died in 1935. So he lived before World War II, and it was before he saw the Soviet. He said that these two battles of Amalek, and how he gets there is a different story, they will never win. He says our physical side can be affected, there's no question about it, but not the spiritual side. And if you take that point and go back to the verses of Amalek in Bishalach, B'chiyadav emunad ba'ashemesh, and Moshe alal Hur and Aaron, but Mateh Elohim biyadi. Man, that's why I opened the conversation with it. That when we start circling back to the Maral and to Rav Kook, I know that sounds like I'm retrofitting it, but you really do see that from the way the Maral and Rav Kook are interpreting these verses, it was because of the spiritual state of the Jewish people that had a lot to do with either the causation or the extension of anti-Semitism, or at least the way that Jews would express themselves. There's two more sources I want to show you. There's Rav Kook on the right side of that page. I only put him in the middle. The Ikara Sinashal Umot Olam Barak Mikoch Maaseh HaTorah Dei Shemaydei Maaseh HaTorah Inam Uvdalimim Kedivrei Chazal Elamitoch Shem Ochlim Pitam. I won't get to where it says it. So take out the last three lines on the bottom of the page, on the bottom of that source. It's an interesting connection. It's not by accident that Parsha Yitro comes after the Parsha of Bishalach. Again, not taking the Rav Maiden approach that these are two different incidences. This is one incident. And that the Amuna that they demonstrated at that time ended up leading right into the Parsha of Parsha Yitro. There's one more concept I wanted to show you, which is more or less more of the same. If you go to the third page, I named the class Va'ata Ayef V'Yageya, Pasuk Yud Tet in Kitetze. If you look in, let's see, in Parsha Bishalach, It's really more before. If you take a look at Pasuk Zion in Bishalach, if you use either the blue ribbon or the page as a page holder, by Yikra Shema Makom Masa Umriva,
Al riv bnei Yisrael v'al naso tam et aroshem lemor hayesh aroshem bekirbenu im ayin.
In the end of the Bishalach HaMalek reference, literally, the Torah tells us the Jewish people are asking with God is in our midst.
If you take a look at the one in Kitetze, in Pasuk Yudchet, Asher korcha baderech vayizanev b'cha kol nechashalim acharecha va'ata ayef v'yageya v'lo yirei Elokim.
The concept of the Jewish attitude towards God is connected to Amalek, almost as if to say that if we're really strong and we live with our convictions, I'm not saying that this is an answer. Anyone who has answers to these huge questions is being a little bit naive and demonstrating some degree of hubris. I'm just putting it out there as what Rav Kook said, not trying to demonstrate that this is a single binary dimensional concept. It's much more complex than that, so bear with me. It's not my intention. But at least according to these two themes, that if there is a weakness in the belief system of the Jewish people, Atah Yef Yageya, or Ayesh Hashem Berkibenu Ma'ayin, that is the catalyst for Amalek. So the reverse of that would be, the corollary would be, that if the people are strong in the beliefs, Ben Adlo Chavero Ben Amal HaMakom, it would be the way to be to find the antidote and the remedy for Amalek. That would be, although neither of them said it explicitly, I think it's certainly implicitly indicated here throughout the sources. And what I wanted to point out is, if you look at Pasuk Yudchet, Ata Ayef V'Yageya, you're tired and you were faint and you were exhausted, V'lo Yarei Elokim, and you didn't fear God. I want to add to this, my own interpretation based on these concepts that Rav Kook and the Maharal point out, is that when the Jewish people are at the point where they don't fear God, Lo Yarei Elokim, there isn't a sense of godliness in their life, then they're Ayef V'Yageya. I don't read the Pasuk, Ata Ayef V'Yageya V'Lo Yarei Elokim, as three different components, but I see the Pasuk more as Ata Ayef V'Yageya V'Lo Yarei Elokim. I know textually, for the textual scholars, it wouldn't really necessarily align so clearly, but I think that the reason that they were Ayef V'Yageya is because they're Lo Yarei Elokim. The Vav is a little bit of a problem that I have to work on, but if I didn't use the Vav as a problem, my challenge, I would definitely say that. I got this idea from the Netziv, who said by Moshe Rabbeinu in Parshat Shmot, where Lo Shemu El Moshe Mikotzer Ruach Umi Avodah Kasha. So he says there that when a person is feeling Kotzer Ruach, a weakness of spirit, everything in the world seems too difficult. And the attitude of Lo Yarei Elokim is what is informing and is impacting the Ayef V'Yageya. Which brings me to the last, and I have a little, I think that if that clock is right, I'm okay. If that's not right, then I'm not okay. I'm gone? Okay. So when you have a chance, take a look at the last piece of Rav Kook on the bottom here, which will explain this concept of the fact of how, the interplay between faith and between our relationship with ourselves and our enemies. I hope this class was a little bit helpful, and wish everybody a very happy Purim Sameach, one which we vanquish our enemies and we see no defeat in our people.